Covered for the JLE that Rabbi Leff, only being in town for 4 days altogether, has made time to speak here. And without further ado, I'd like to ask Rabbi Leff to speak to us.
I am extremely happy and honored to be able to both be here and to be able to address you. Whenever I'm given a topic, so if I like the topic, then I speak about it. And if I don't like the topic, I learned in the past how to get around it. I'll tell you an interesting story to start. I was once looking very much to speak in a certain shul in New York, because I was on a fundraising mission, and that was a very, very opportune place to be for exposure. And they were willing to let me speak there Friday night, which was an optimum time to speak, with one condition, that they chose the topic, and I spoke about the topic they wanted me to speak about, because they wanted me to speak about something controversial so they would attract people. So I agreed. And they gave me the topic. This was many, many years ago. The topic was Rabbi Kahana and the Jewish Underground. And I knew that whatever I said, pro or con, half the people would be against me. And that would be the end of my fundraising tour. But I accepted. And the first 10 minutes of my speech, I spoke about Rabbi Kalman Kahana, who was the head of Paul Le'Agudas Yisrael. And then I spoke a little bit about the subway system in Haifa, which is the... And after that I said, now I fulfilled my condition. I spoke about Rabbi Kahana and the Jewish underground, and now I'll speak about what I want to speak about.
Did you make money on the
job? Yes. The topic today I'm not going to circumvent. I'm going to speak about it. But I'm going to speak about it from my perspective. Viewing current events through Torah eyes. I think the people at the JLE overestimate who I am and think that I have Torah eyes. And when they gave me the topic, I didn't have a chance to ask somebody who has Torah eyes how they view current events. So I'm not going to be so presumptuous to be able to explain to you through Torah eyes what is happening in the world. But I want to explain to you first why it's important to see everything, including current events, through Torah eyes. And why seeing them through other eyes, eyes of flesh and blood, are really not the proper view, and why it's definitely a distorted view to see things without seeing them through a Torah lens and through a Torah perspective. And then I will tell you what I think in general the major issues of current events, not necessarily all of the details, but the general issues of current events these days that affect the Jewish people, what's behind them. The world, I'm sure that those who come and learn here understand, the world is not just a place made of atoms and molecules and the physical world, but there is as important or more important a spiritual aspect to this world for sure. Sure, those who come to Rabbi Tatz's Shiurim don't need me to tell you that, and you have a very detailed, very deep understanding of that from those Shiurim. Chazal say that every blade of grass has an angel that stands over it and says to grow. Now you can understand that to mean that there's a little flitty creature that's invisible to you and tells the grass to grow. But what it really means is that every physical force in this world has behind it a spiritual force that really is its cause. And the physical forces we see in this world are only the results. They're not the causes. And everything ultimately is caused by God, who created and from whom all these forces, both spiritual and physical, emanate. And because of that, everything has a united common purpose. Everything is not helter-skelter. It's not a bunch of coincidences. But there is one united, all-inclusive plan for this world that started when God created the world and will end when we reach that completion. And everything that happens in the world is part of that plan. And it's a plan that emanates from the ultimate oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the spiritual world is one and the physical world is one, and together they're one. And if you don't understand that, and you look at whether the spiritual world, the Torah world, as something that is made up of many parts, and you see each part separately, or you see the physical world as something made up of many parts and look at each part separately, you get a very distorted view. Let's start with the Torah itself. The Torah is not a bunch of disjointed things. And if you look at the Torah as such, then you distort it completely. Let me give you a very simple example of what that means from this coming week's Sedra. When they finished the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and all of its vessels, so they brought it to Moshe Rabbeinu to put together, because no one could erect it, no one could put it together. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, "God, it's impossible for me also, I can't put it together either." God said, "Look, Moshe, I knew that you were upset that you didn't have a real active part in making this tabernacle. And therefore, I want to give you the honor of putting it together. But I know you can't do it. So you put your hand to it, and I'll put it together, and it'll look like you're putting it together." What does it mean? And not only that, not only did Moshe Rabbeinu put it together, but it says for the 7 days prior to the final erection of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu put it up every day and took it down every day. Put it up and took it down. Now, if I was Moshe Rabbeinu and I didn't have a real part in putting up this Mishkan, and God said, well, for appearance's sake, we'll make it look like you have a part, but really I'm doing it and you're not doing it, that would not really placate me, right? Because I wouldn't have a part. What difference does it make if it looks like or it doesn't look like it? And secondly, everybody could do everything in the Mishkan. There were things there that were very difficult to do, things that had to be done miraculously. Why can't they put it together? It didn't seem to be the most difficult part to put it all together. And thirdly, Moshe Rabbeinu was not the one who had to, throughout the time in the desert, take down and put up this Mishkan. So why do you need the practice for 7 days to take it down and put it up? What was the purpose of that? I think the idea is the following, and I will illustrate it with a story. Once had an elderly man, I guess looking back now, he wasn't so elderly, but an elderly man in my kehillah who was relatively healthy, but he had some kind of condition that was an ongoing, dangerous condition that if he didn't have the proper diet, it could immediately turn into something life-threatening. And his wife called me one Tzom Gedalia, right after Rosh Hashanah, frantic. She said, "You must save my husband's life." I said, "What exactly is the problem? I think maybe you should call 911, not call me. What's your husband's life in danger?" She said, "Yeah. We just went to the doctor. The doctor said that my husband has to eat 3 regular meals on Yom Kippur, and if not, his life is in danger. Even though he seems fine, but his condition will be exacerbated by fasting, and he must eat." And when we left the doctor, my husband turned to me and said, I haven't eaten on Yom Kippur since my bar mitzvah. And I don't plan to start now. Doctor's a nice man, but I'm going to fast on Yom Kippur. And I'm afraid my husband's going to die. So do something. So I called the doctor, and I found out all of the details why he felt that he has to eat three regular meals on Yom Kippur. I called another doctor, a religious doctor that I knew, gave him the information and said, if you had a patient who had this condition, what would you suggest? He said, that person has to eat three regular meals on Yom Kippur or his life is really in danger. And then I called in the gentleman. And I said to him that I spoke to your wife, I called your doctor, and I called another doctor. And everybody concurs that you must eat three regular meals on Yom Kippur. Turned to me, said, Rabbi, you're a nice man. You're about a third of my age. And I haven't eaten on Yom Kippur since my bar mitzvah. And you can't force me to eat on Yom Kippur now, and I plan to fast. Finished. I said, you're right. I can't force you to eat on Yom Kippur. You can do what you want. You're a big man. But I am the rabbi of this shul. And I'm telling you now that when you leave my office, I'm going to call the gabbai of the shul, and I'm going to instruct him that you are never to get another honor in this shul ever. He said, on what grounds? I said, we are very lenient here about giving honors to people who are not Sabbath observers. But we have never given an idol worshiper a honor here, and you're an idol worshiper. He looked at me like I was out of my mind. I said, let me explain. I said, the God that we worship in this shul, right, said that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. You obviously worship a different God. Now, I don't really care if the other God you worship is called Zeus or it's called Yom Kippur. You worship the Yom Kippur God. And the Yom Kippur God said you have to fast on Yom Kippur. But our God said that you have to eat. So if you want to worship the Yom Kippur God, I'm more than happy you should do that, but not in this shul, and you will not get an honor in this shul. He ate on Yom Kippur. But what I told him was not far from the truth. If you give separate importance and holiness to anything, could be Yom Kippur, it could be anything, it could be Yerushalayim, it could be Israel, it could be anything. The holiest things, the temple. But if you make it something that has intrinsic holiness and you don't realize that it's part of a system that emanates from one God and the whole system works together and the same God that said under these circumstances you have to fast on Yom Kippur and under these circumstances you have to eat and you give independent importance to Yom Kippur, then that becomes an idolatry. The Torah is a system that emanates from one God and you have to see it as a total unified system that holiness of anything comes from the holiness of Torah. And the Torah is one unit that applies in all situations, all times,